Welcome to the very first podcast for Men of the Scarlet and Gray Live. It is not the end of the world, contrary to what ESPN and everyone's saying here in Buckeye Nation. We are going to be just fine. We're going to talk about everything with Braxton Miller and previewing the upcoming season in the Big Ten. I'm your host, Josh Schott, as I will be here every week on Men of the Scarlet and Gray Live. Well, this week we're going to be previewing the Big Ten, but in most weeks we'll talk about the upcoming Buckeye game as well as the upcoming Big Ten games and some of the biggest stories and games happening around the country, as well as many other things you'll see in our posts on the site, and we'll explain more next week in our second episode what our normal episodes will be like. But this week we're going to be previewing the Big Ten and looking at, of course, the Braxton Miller injury that just suddenly happened here recently. And, of course, every week I'll be joined by fellow Men of the Scarlet and Grayers, and I'm going to introduce them now to you. Jeremiah Sharp, one of our fearless leaders of the site. Jeremiah, how about you introduce yourself?
I'm Sir Motzag on Twitter. Jeremiah Sharp, longtime Buckeye fan. Just excited for this new opportunity we have here to do podcasts for the site. Thank you guys for joining us.
No problem at all. And also joining us is Shannon Summers, who had the brilliant idea of opening with that song to start the very first episode. Shannon, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Shannon, and you hit me at smsummers84 on Twitter, and glad to be here and finally doing this with everybody.
Glad to have you here, Shannon, and introducing next is Andrew joining us. Andrew, why don't you introduce yourself to Buckeye Nation, everyone watching.
What's up, Buckeye Nation? I'm Bucknut22 on Twitter. Looking forward to doing the podcast weekly. Hope you guys enjoy it.
Glad to have you here, Andrew. And last but certainly not least, Chip Minnick. And Chip, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you for having me. I can be reached at Twitter at Chip Minnick, and longtime Ohio State fan, and really anxious to contribute not only to the blog, but also here to this podcast for Men of the Scarlet and Gray. Let's get going.
All right, I'm ready to go too if you guys are. Of course, we're going to talk about the biggest news happening in Buckeye Nation right now, and that is Braxton Miller will be out for the upcoming season with a torn labrum. It is it's crushing news for the Buckeyes. But what's your first reaction, guys? We'll start off with you, Jeremiah. What was your first reaction to this devastating news?
Well, I assume, like most people, it was denial, hopefulness that it was a bad story that was coming out. You know, as it's gone along, it looks more and more clear like the worst case scenario has happened. Braxton has re-injured his shoulder. Sounds like there's a torn labrum, but there's lots of theories going on out there right now still, and nothing official from Ohio State yet, which is very interesting because I thought we would hear something this afternoon from them, but we'll just have to wait it out and see for sure if they're maybe trying to get a second opinion or something right now.
Yeah, it is kind of fishy. We haven't heard anything yet from the university, but, Pete Thamel reported it. He's right on top of the Buckeyes. Several other credible news outlets. Tim May, of course, reported it first last night. Anyone can jump in. What do you think? What was your first reaction to this, and what do the Buckeyes need to do to move on?
I thought I needed a bottle of Jack first. But there is official word that came out from Ohio State University. It just came out. And Braxton Miller is out for the year, and he intends to graduate in December and plans on playing next year, according to the statement.
At Ohio State?
Yes.
Really?
It just came out. Just seen it on...
Yeah, let me just read a little bit of this. I'm reading the actual statement from Ohio State Buckeye Notes, and it says here that Ohio State senior quarterback Braxton Miller re-injured his right shoulder attempting a short pass in practice Monday and will miss the 2014 season. Miller was not hit on the play and was in the process of returning from off-season surgery in February, but he sustained in the 2014 Orange Bowl. He says, Urban Meyer says, my thoughts and prayers are with Braxton and his family at this time. It's an unfortunate injury to a young man who means so much to this program and Buckeye Nation. And Miller said, I love Ohio State and Buckeye Nation, and my goal is to come back from this injury stronger and better than ever. I am on course to graduate in December, and I want to attend graduate school and then return to lead the Buckeyes next season. In the meantime, I want to give all the support I can to my coaches and teammates as they chase a championship this season.
Rough.
There you have it. I'm shocked he's coming back. Yeah, I don't know about you guys. I thought he would go in the NFL, being that he's raising a kid now, and he's going to need more financial support for that. But he's coming back next year, he says, for now. Do you think he'll stay true to that and be back in the Scarlet and Gray next year?
I think he will.
Personally, this is an emotional time for him, obviously, and I think probably his first thing, his thought process is to come back and play, because he wanted to come back and play this year. That was his decision. He could have left. But when time goes by and he talks to NFL teams, we'll see what the pool has for him to leave early and not put himself in more injuries next year and playing for free, if you will.
The thing that I'm most impressed with as far as Ohio State in terms of the way that they're going to handle this is, I think they have the luxury now of making sure that the rehab is not rushed, is not, that they're going to overexert or push Braxton. I'm not suggesting that they did that with this past rehab, but, what's most important for Braxton Miller is he is going to graduate in December. He is going to still be and forever will be a part of the program, no matter if he continues to play for Ohio State in 2015. And I think, it's probably in his best interest from an NFL draft perspective to come back, because he was projected as a fifth-round draft choice this past draft. You're talking coming off of an injury in the Orange Bowl. Now he has an opportunity to rehab it, take his time, and then, kind of get an idea as to if he's projected well for the NFL draft in 2015, he can say, I'm going to go, or he can come back for that fifth year and possibly lead Ohio State in 2015.
What if JT has a stellar year?
I think that's a good problem to have.
Because like as Tony Gerdeman pointed out on Twitter here, as Jeremiah was reading off of there, some other things about it, but Tony Gerdeman pointed out we'll have the best backup in the nation next year possibly.
Right, and I guess, I don't know, this is something that, when with all the speculation that was swirling throughout the day, in terms of everyone kept thinking the worst, and now that we have confirmation of the worst in terms of Braxton Miller being out for this year, my thoughts immediately in terms of for Ohio State as it relates to JT Barrett, as it relates to Cardale Jones, and I'm going to even throw Stephen Collier in the mix, is that now the coaching staff has arguably 10 days, including today. If we want to take away today, let's say 9, they have 9 days to get JT and Cardale Jones ready to play against Navy, and they can turn to Stephen Collier and say, you're up next. And I'm of the opinion that Stephen Collier, even though a redshirt year was probably in the cards up until the events of yesterday, it's in Ohio State's best interest to give Stephen Collier some playing time against Kent State, any other kind of team that more than likely Ohio State will be up on, because all it will take is an injury to either JT or Cardale, and Stephen Collier is now your number one backup. So it really, I think this, in comparison and contrasting it to the 2001 episode with Steve Belisari and Craig Krenzel and Scott McMullen, Ohio State's coaching staff's in a much better situation than in previous situations.
I think it's good it happened early and not mid-season.
I agree with that, Andrew, and I agree with you, Chip, as well. As somebody who follows and covers and writes about recruiting a lot, I won't say that I didn't think, well, there goes a scholarship for next year that we had planned on using. But if he graduates in December, will he still be on scholarship next year, or how does that work? Does anybody know?
I believe he will stay on scholarship, but in terms of again, I think he's going to have a better understanding in terms of, we're talking, it's August 19th, right now, it's the kind of thing where it's entirely possible that come December, come January, in terms of where he is in terms of his rehab, around the time when the NFL draft, in terms of their draft projections, they'll be able to tell him, hey, if you stay another year, you will, your draft projection will be much better than where it is presently. But, yeah, absolutely. He would be on scholarship for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Let's go back to what Shannon had put out there. If for some reason, JT leads us to an undefeated national championship winning season, wins the Heisman Trophy. How can you possibly bench that young man and put Braxton in here?
That's a hell of a problem to have, though.
Braxton, how do you not start him next year after all he's done for Ohio State?
Again, I'd like to just get through. I'd like to get through the events of, you know, August, you know, 30th at Navy, and make sure that, because I think that game is certainly taken on a lot more importance and a lot more difficulty than I think anyone on this podcast truly anticipated 24 hours ago.
Definitely. I think the Virginia Tech game takes on a lot more meaning too, because that defensive secondary that they have,
right. You
know, they have a really good secondary, and to face that your second game is going to be pretty tough.
Exactly.
I think someone steps up big for the offense. They have weapons.
Here's an interesting tidbit. So as soon as this news came out today that Rex Miller will be out the year, the odds makers in Vegas made Ohio State a 50-1 championship instead of 12-1 championship caliber team. Still, though, better than Michigan and Michigan State, which are 75-1.
I thought we weren't going to take shots at the other teams until later in the podcast, but
it's a long podcast. We have plenty of time to take as many shots as we want.
Okay.
Good deal. Good deal.
I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting to watch here. As another point I remember on Twitter was, is Braxton will be a valuable asset on the sidelines this year as another coach, kind of in the same role Kenny G played last year on the sidelines as the backup, kind of played as an extra coach. Braxton will probably definitely play a role in that. What do you guys think of that?
Well, that would be crucial. I'm sorry. That would be crucial for, again, I think for, you know, you got to anticipate – and that, maybe I'm overanalyzing this, that JT Barrett is going to play. You know, I was listening to 97.1, and a lot of people were comparing and contrasting, what Urban Meyer did with when he arrived at Florida when he had Chris Leak and Tim Tebow. And I realize a lot of Ohio State fans don't want to think of, you know, what Urban Meyer's Florida team did to Ohio State, but think of Cardale Jones when he played last year. He was almost like a Tim Tebow type guy. I mean, he's a monster. I mean,
he
averaged 7 yards a carry, and I can just totally anticipate with JT Barrett starting that. Okay, when they get down near goal line, having the luxury of having Cardale Jones there to actually run the ball in, possibly like Tim Tebow did. And then to the question that was raised, Braxton Miller being on the sideline coaching up Stephen Collier, I think that is truly invaluable.
They haven't named the starter. Like, of course they haven't yet, but I mean everyone's jumping to the conclusion that it's going to be JT, but I mean all honesty, JT just passed Cardell on this past weekend.
That's correct.
And he's slightly ahead of him. I mean, Cardell's a good player, too. I mean, I honestly see both of them getting in a little bit the first game.
Oh, easily. I think you have to.
You have to give both game experience and see who, you know, because it's only 10 days, you guys said.
And it'll help, too, that we have so many great running backs that'll help shoulder the burden against in those first couple games is the quarterbacks get their feet wet. Because, I mean, you got Ezekiel Elliott coming back and a host of other great backups behind him, so they at least have that to lean on in the first few games until they get their feet wet.
And plus the other positive is during this whole training camp, Braxton hasn't been getting all that many reps. So, you know, the other three quarterbacks have been getting a majority of the reps. So they're getting used to the offense already.
And they'll have, and there's, you know, the preseason is decently easy except the Virginia Tech game. I mean, Navy's not a walkthrough, but, you know, we have Kent State and Cincinnati where they could get good game experience in, too.
Yeah, Cincinnati's not going to be a walkthrough, but they should still handle them easily. But
yeah.
Well, it's not short range Cincinnati. They've been favored to win the AACC-4-3-2-1 or whatever it's called.
What was that formation again?
but let's talk about the size matter. Cardell Jones is 6'5", 250 pounds, and JT Barrett's only 6'1", 220. JT's right. Our smallest quarterback on the roster.
Right. That's what I was saying. I think if the Ohio State coaches, you know, again, you know, I think, you know, Andrew brought it up that, you know, both, and I agree, I think both quarterbacks have to play against Navy, both quarterbacks have to play against Virginia Tech, and I'm of the opinion, I don't think it's completely far-fetched that they'll come up with the different plays and formations and packages that work best for each quarterback, and I'm just guessing that when it gets down to in the red zone on the goal line, that Cardale Jones is the most logical player to run quarterback sneaks when you get down to needing a yard near the goal line or to possibly keep a drive going.
Definitely.
Let's hope he helps out in that area as well this year and keeps the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That would absolutely be a key. And I wanted to point out, I was just looking at Cincinnati's roster here. They have Gunnar Keel, looks like, starting quarterback for them. Everybody remembers him at Notre Dame transferring. So he'll be a wild card to watch.
Notre Dame. Where have I heard about Notre Dame from? Where have I?
Oh, my gosh.
Not ESPN.
Not Bleacher Report.
They wouldn't be involved in some kind of scandal, would they? No. They wouldn't be because they would be reported on. No. Okay.
Of course not.
We could spend a whole podcast talking about Braxton and Notre Dame, but we'll move on now to our preview for the Big Ten Conference now, and we're going to start off in the – we're going to break down the West Division first and the East Division, and then we'll give who we think, how the conference will shake out, who will win the divisions in the Big Ten Championship game, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll start off with the West, like I said, at first, and the first team we're going to take a look at is Nebraska Cornhuskers. They are coming off a 9-4 season with a 5-3 record in conference. They won the Gator Bowl. They're coming off a Gator Bowl win over Georgia, 24-19 win. They got the number 51 strongest schedule, according to Phil Steele. They opened with Florida Atlantic, followed by McNeese State. Then they play at Fresno State, which might be a trap game for them. They then have Miami of Florida, which is an interesting game. They have Illinois homecoming, then the following week at Michigan State. Then they have a bye, then they go on the road again to Northwestern, followed by Rutgers and Purdue at home. And then they'll have a bye, followed by the last three games of the season on the road at Wisconsin, Minnesota at home, and then, of course, their annual rivalry game with Iowa on Black Friday, and that will be in Iowa City. So Nebraska has some interesting players coming back, some interesting players left, most notably Taylor Martinez. Chip, who are going to be the key players for the Cornhuskers this year?
Well, offensively, I really admire running back Amir Abdullah. I mean, that he's, you know, a complete, I mean, he's NFL ready type guy that, you know, he can catch the ball. He's a dynamic runner in the open field, without question, in terms of not only their best wideout, but I'd have to say the best hair in college football is wide receiver Kenny Bell. guy is offensively, I mean, their quarterback position, they're probably going to be relying on Tommy Armstrong Jr., but I know that they, you know, they're kind of probably, you know, trying to see, you know, after losing Martinez, who they want to rely on. And on the defensive side of the ball, defensive end Randy Gregory is arguably their top NFL draft prospect, even higher than Abdullah. So, I mean, there's a lot of talent there. I think Nebraska, I mean, that non-conference slate, I wouldn't say that it's easy by any stretch. I think Fresno State might be a tougher game than a lot of people want to give Nebraska credit for. But I think Nebraska should go 4-0. And that conference schedule, I mean, it's so common to say when you say Nebraska under Bo Pelini, they're going to win 9 games. But, you know, I think Nebraska should be a real formidable team in that Western Division.
My only question is the cat allowed on the sidelines?
Can only hope. Can only hope. Help with recruiting.
Because if the cat's allowed on the sidelines, it can win more games.
I agree with that.
Because you know, they did lose Michael Rose for the year too, their linebacker. That's going to be a big loss for them.
Right.
But they still got Santos for, you know, another linebacker, and they got number two defensive line and linebacker corps in the Big Ten. So they're going to be pretty formidable on the defensive side.
They were young last year, but they got a lot more experience, and I think they're going to be a lot better unit this year.
Yeah, but still have to go against Wisconsin's running game, and I think there's only one team that held Wisconsin underneath 100 yards. Wasn't there only one team that held Wisconsin underneath 100 yards last year?
I think, yeah, it wasn't just Michigan State, or was it us?
Maybe it was two.
I can't, my memory's a little fuzzy on me regarding that stat.
I definitely think that I mean, Nebraska, I mean, they have a tough, they have to go to Michigan State at night. They have to go to Wisconsin. That game, obviously, as Josh said, on Black Friday at Iowa, you know, those are all, you know, tough places to play and tough opponents. But again, I could see them winning 9, maybe 10 games. It really depends, obviously, as Shannon said, if the cat's allowed on the sidelines.
Well, and that's your three toughest games of the year, really.
Yeah, those are the three I only see them losing, in my opinion, because, I mean, I think Miami could maybe trip them up because they got Duke Johnson back at running back, who had a really good season going last year, but the game's going to be at Nebraska, so that'll be a real real advantage for the Cornhuskers, and it helps that Fresno State lost their quarterback, too, so they're not as strong as they were last season, because last season they went, I believe, 11-2 last year, so, yeah, I think they win 9 games this year, but it wouldn't surprise me if they maybe overachieved and maybe they get to 10 wins. Is there any other thoughts you guys think, Jeremiah, Andrew, you want to add?
I agree with the 8 or 9 wins. I mean, they have 3 tough road games with Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Iowa. So, I mean, they can pull out 2 of those wins, win 1 or 2 of those games. Maybe they should have a decent season.
Jeremiah?
I just hate Nebraska. That's what I want to add.
Is it Bo Pelini?
I don't like him either.
I'm glad we never went after him as a coach. That's all I have to say about that.
All right, that's Cornhuskers for you. Now we're going to move on to the Iowa Hawkeyes. They are coming off an 8-5 season, a 5-3 record in conference. They're led by 16th-year head coach Kirk Ferentz. They are coming off a close loss to LSU in the Outback Bowl from last season. They will they have the number 70 toughest schedule, according to Phil Steele. They will open up against Northern Iowa. They'll be followed by a MAC opponent, Ball State. And then they have the Cy-Hawk Trophy game against Iowa State in Week 3. Week 4, they go on the road to Pittsburgh. In Week 5, they play at Purdue. That's followed by a bye. They then get Indiana on a homecoming, and then they go on the road to Maryland, followed by another bye, and then they will finish off the season with 5 straight games, with a home game against Northwestern, then they go on the road against Minnesota and Illinois, and then they'll wrap it up with Wisconsin at home and Nebraska at home on Black Friday, as we just mentioned here earlier. Iowa, they were a solid team, but inconsistent at times last year. They returned a lot of different players. Andrew, who do you think, what player stands out to you as key for the Hawkeyes' success?
Definitely, Mark Weissman is going to be relied on at running back, and then they have a decent returning talent with their offensive line. Then their defense, Travis Perry, he had a good year last year, and then Quentin Alston. So I see them doing pretty good. I mean, I think Iowa is a little underrated. They have a decent easy schedule. They're home against Wisconsin, and I think they can run the table.
Yeah, I think their schedule's very favorably. In fact, I mean, I'll give away what I think they're going to do right now. I think Iowa's going to go 11-1 this season. It's kind of a bold pick. I think their only loss will be to Wisconsin, because I think Wisconsin's got a better team than them, even though the game's being played at Iowa. But I think they're going to go 11-1 this year, and they're going to be in the Big Ten West race down at the very end.
What, you're saying they're going to beat Mark May's team?
Yes.
Pittsburgh's no not way. That. A Big Ten team's going to beat Mark May's team?
That's never happened before, has it?
No. No. 72-0, no.
I think this Iowa team sets up perfectly for the typical Kirk Ferentz team, you know, they'll lose 4 or 5 years in a row, and then they'll come out and go 11-1 somehow, and nobody will recognize they're coming. And I think this is what that year brings for Iowa fans. Looking at the schedule, their two most difficult games are both at home against Wisconsin and Nebraska. I don't think you can ask for much better than that. I think Iowa's going to be a 10-plus win team this year, and they're my pick to win the West.
Wow.
My pick, too. They're my pick.
I guess I'm the contrarian, then. I'm gonna say that I agree that Wisconsin, I think, will trip them up. And, again, I look at it like there's obviously a lot of talent coming back, like Brandon Scherff at offensive tackle. Again, he's a highly rated NFL draft prospect for next year. But, again, late in the season when you have to go on the road at Minnesota, at Illinois, when both teams have bye weeks before Iowa comes to play them, and then we've already discussed the fact that Wisconsin and Nebraska, that's how they finish up the season. I think it could be a really difficult ending for the season for Iowa.
I think that's the thing that's going to hurt Iowa is had their bye week, and they have to have five straight.
Exactly.
Yeah, but not having to play Ohio State, not having to play Michigan, not having to play Penn State.
Or Michigan State.
Will you stop saying that word?
It sets up for a really good year for Iowa fans. Now, knowing Kirk Ferentz, it could also mean they win two games this year, so you never know what's going to happen out from Iowa.
He'll be there for a while with that contract they signed into, so not a lot of Hawkeye fans are excited about that, but if they win 10-11 games, I think they'll warm back up on Ferentz. So that's the Iowa Hawkeyes. Next, we're going to move on to a team. They didn't exactly have a great season last year. That was the Purdue Boilermakers. They're coming off a 1-11 record and an 0-8 record in conference, the worst in the Big Ten. They are led by second-year head coach Darryl Hazel, of course, former wide receiver coach for the Buckeyes. He might be regretting that decision now to leave us. But taking a look at Purdue's schedule, yeah, the 43rd toughest schedule. They start off against Western Michigan, and they could play Central Michigan. Both games are at home. The third week, they'll play Notre Dame at a neutral site game in Indianapolis. And then they'll get FCS Cupcake Southern Illinois in the fourth week. Fifth week, they get Iowa for homecoming. Sixth week at Illinois, followed by a home game against Michigan State. And then they go on the road at Minnesota. They then have a bye, then they go to Nebraska, and then come back home for Wisconsin, followed by another bye week, and then they finish off with Northwestern at home and a road game in Indiana. And Jeremiah, who do you think is the best player on the Purdue Boilermaker team?
Do they have any players? I'm looking here at their stats from last year, and I'm going to click on one of these guys' names and see if you recognize who he is. Their leading rusher was somebody named Akeem Hunt. Well, he was a senior, so he's gone. Sorry.
Next.
Their second leading rusher was somebody named Brandon Cottom. Also a senior. Never mind, he's gone.
Oh, just say it. Their best player is their punter.
Their best player is their punter.
I disagree. I think it's the kicker.
But honestly, if you look at their schedule, I think he has a good chance of winning 4 games if you count Northwestern, because I'm not real happy about Northwestern right now. So 4 games, I mean, that's a vast improvement over 1 game from last year, so there's 4 winnable games on their schedule this year.
Are you including Notre Dame?
All right, 5 winnable
games. Okay.
I'm not even as optimistic as you. I think they only win 2 games. They'll beat Southern Illinois and one of the directional Michigan teams. I think they'll lose to one of the directional Michigan teams, though. And Notre Dame will barely beat Purdue in triple overtime.
Yeah, that's that Southern Illinois game. I mean, the Salukis are tough. Tough, I tell you.
They did finish 7-5 last year, and they lost Illinois only by 8 points. So, who knows? Maybe they might beat them, too.
Next!
One more thing. Their only win last year was against Indiana State by 6.
Boiler down.
Boiler down. Okay, I think that's enough for the Purdue for now. I think we.
Oh wait, we forgot the biggest drum in the land.
Oh yeah, that's right. They got that.
Come on, how did we forget that?
They got that going for them, which is nice. So, moving on, Minnesota Golden Gophers. They had a little bit better season last year. They're coming off an 8-5 year where they kind of overachieved. They had a 4-4 conference record, and they are coming off a close loss to Syracuse in the Texas Bowl. And they will open up their season. They have actually the 22nd toughest schedule in the nation, so it's not easy for sure. They open up with Eastern Illinois on a Thursday night next week. They then follow that up with Middle Tennessee at home, and they got to go on the road to at TCU, who's a lot better team this year. That'll be a tough game for them. Then they get play San Jose State at home, and that's followed by a trip to the team up north, Big House. And they'll have a bye week. They come home, play Northwestern Purdue. Then they play at Illinois. Then they have a bye week, and they finish off with Iowa and Ohio State at home, and then on two road trips to Nebraska and Wisconsin. They're, of course, led by Jerry Kill. And who stands out to you, Shannon, as a player to watch for Minnesota?
Well, you got your Cobb, the running back, you know, and then Max Williams, their tight end. Those are two big ones. They got 15 starters coming back, so that's pretty important. But they got a brutal schedule, and it doesn't look good for them. And the thing that concerns me, and I hate to say it and not make it fun of them, but how long is Jerry Kill going to be on the sideline with his, you know, with his history? I mean, I don't know. You don't know who's coaching, and it's not a slight against the man. I think he's a good coach, but it's just.
Yeah, no, it just gets on reliability. You don't know if he's got to be there, and that kind of creates a flux in terms of game planning and leadership.
Right. And I think a lot of the guys rally, you know, they rally after something like that happens. And like you said, they kind of overachieved last year. But they got a really tough schedule, especially the last four. Whew. Iowa, Ohio State, then at Nebraska and at Wisconsin. Yeah, okay.
It's Ohio State's trap game.
Yeah, I agree.
It might be a trap game for Ohio State, yeah.
That's their trap game.
I definitely think...
We're giving off a trap game for Ohio State at this point. I mean, because we have no idea what's going to happen with the season now.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I definitely think the fact that that brutal ending schedule, that might be the difference between, you know, I think Minnesota can be 3-1, you know, maybe with a loss at Texas Christian on September 13th. But I agree that ending, the last four games, I think that's going to make or break any kind of possibility of a bowl right there.
If they can go into the outhouse and win, they can really set their season on. So
That's entirely possible too, considering Minnesota is not too flashy. I mean, they're essentially just going to, you know, run the ball and try to play sound defense, and you know, just again, they're not going to try to do anything to beat themselves, but that might be enough in the outhouse.
Well, speaking of the outhouse, the record I want to throw out here, they're 2-30 since 1978 versus Michigan, but both wins did come in Ann Arbor, both in 1986 and 2005. So they only won two, but both were at Michigan.
They're due.
They've got to win six games by Illinois to make it to a bowl game. Now, you know, those last four games are just going to be a lot to ask for them to get bowl eligible in those games.
I give them a chance against Nebraska if they were playing them at home, but being at Nebraska is just going to be tough. I don't think they're going to get six wins, though. I think they're going to finish just short with five wins.
Right.
I agree.
Moving on.
Yeah, anybody wants to add anything else about the Golden Gophers? All right.
I hope Jerry Kill stays on the sideline. He has a healthy season.
I agree with that.
Yep.
Moving on to another team that's on the hot seat this season, the Illinois Fighting Illini. They're led by third-year coach Tim Beckman, who last season was making Illinois fans a little impatient towards the end of the season. He started off his first season 2-10, last year 4-8. So it's definitely a make or break, I think, for Beckman this season. We can all agree on that. They're coming off, like I said, 4-8 season, 1-7 in conference. They have the 38th toughest schedule in the nation. They open up with Youngstown State at home. They then have Western Kentucky at home. Then they have to go on the road to Washington, which will be a very tough game. Then they play Texas State at home. They go on the road to Nebraska, Purdue at home, then at Wisconsin. They then get a bye. Then they get Minnesota at home. Then they have to come on the road to the Buckeyes. Then they get a bye, and they finish off with Iowa at home, Penn State at home, and then their annual rivalry game at Northwestern. So, Chip, who do you think stands out on Illinois as the key player to help them get the bowl eligibility?
Well, I think, I mean, Josh Ferguson is pretty much the name that I'm familiar with in terms of what they have to build around offensively. But I'm not gonna mince words here. I think Tim Beckman is, if there is any coach within the Big Ten who is more on the hot seat, I don't want to say that I want to meet that person, but I'd be surprised if Tim Beckman is not the name that everyone is at the top of the list in terms of being on the hot seat. I think ever since he arrived in Illinois, tried to poach the players from Penn State when the Jerry Sandusky scandal erupted, I don't think he's really endeared himself, you know, to the fans, to the alumni. Obviously, he's not winning. I mean, they're going to need it. I don't see how they get to six wins for bowl eligibility. I mean, they're going to probably be likely favored at home versus Purdue, but they're going to probably be underdogs, you know, versus Minnesota, versus Iowa. They need to steal wins, the way I see it, versus Penn State and at Northwestern to get to a bowl. I just don't. I mean, maybe you guys disagree, but I just don't see how Illinois, the talent. I mean, they're replacing Nathan Shielhaus, who seemed like he was there for forever, with Riley O'Toole at quarterback. I don't see how they, if they have the talent to cobble together, and I'm highly skeptical of the coaching to get to six wins for bowl eligibility.
Well, let me disagree with you, because I do disagree with you. I do think that Illinois is a bowl team this year, and let me tell you why. Youngstown State, Western Kentucky, Texas State, Purdue, Penn State, and Northwestern are all wins.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Penn State struggles mightily this year. I think that they get three or four wins, they would be very lucky. And I'm not even joking about that. But, you know, what Franklin's bringing in is great talents, but they're not there yet. And though that, without, other than Christian Hackenberg, who do they have? So I think Penn State, Northwestern, and then Texas State, Western Kentucky, and Youngstown State are all winnable games. And they just got to beat either Purdue or Minnesota at home, and they're bowl eligible.
And they have that transfer, right, at quarterback?
West Lund.
Yeah.
That's the wild card. If he does, right, he puts up the numbers he put at Oklahoma State, then I think they will be a bowl team. I think it'll really all come down to his performance.
And if you look at what Shielhaus did last year under Beckman with, you know, 3,200 yards passing and 21 touchdowns. Yes, he threw a lot of interceptions, but that's a pass-heavy offense that can put up a lot of points quickly. And I think that they may see a little bit of a turning point this year and get that six wins and get bowl eligible for the first time in a while.
Hey, since we mentioned Youngstown State, I just want to say congratulations to Jim Tressel for being introduced yesterday as their president.
Well deserved.
Awesome. Yes.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, I'm happy he found he's going back home, kind of, and that's a good position for him, I think.
Yes.
Out of the spotlight, and he's at a school he loves as much as Ohio State, because Youngstown State's always been close to him as well. So I don't know. They got a Illinois. I'll believe it when they see it. For now, I think they only win four games, but best case scenario, like Jeremiah said, I think they could get six wins if West Lunt performs well. Is there anything else anybody wants to add about the Fighting Illini?
No, I think they're going to be bowl eligible myself.
I think they're going to. It's going to make Halloween weekend that much more enjoyable on national television in the Horseshoe November 1st when they come to Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to that.
It'll be a fun game for sure. Moving on, we're going to look now at the Northwestern Wildcats, who we mentioned a lot here. They're coming off a heartbreaking season where they went 5-7, 1-7 in conference. They weren't the same after Ohio State beat them in that close game last year. They dropped, six straight games before finally getting a win to cap off the season against Illinois, and that was only by a field goal, and they suffered numerous injuries. and it wasn't a very good season for Pat Fitzgerald's bunch. They have the 45th toughest schedule this year, and they'll open up against California. That'll be followed by a very game opponent in Northern Illinois at home. Then they have a bye week. They will then face Western Illinois, FCS team. Then they go on the road to Happy Valley against Penn State. Then they'll get the Badgers at home. Then they'll go on the road to the Golden Gophers and then come back home for homecoming against Nebraska, followed by a bye week. And they finish off the season at Iowa, Michigan home, at Notre Dame, at Purdue, and then their annual rivalry game with Illinois, as we just mentioned. And, of course, the big news lately with the Wildcats was they lost Venric Mark to transfer, their best offensive player last year, and arguably their second best returning offensive player, wide receiver Christian Jones, who led the team receptions last year, was lost to a career or season-ending injury. So it's not looking good for the Wildcats. As Jeremiah mentioned, Illinois might be able to even beat them this year. They're just looking very vulnerable. They don't look very good on paper. So who's the player really to watch now that Venric Mark's gone? Andrew, who do you think other teams should look out for against the Wildcats?
Well, I mean, obviously they have Trevor Siemian returning at quarterback, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So he had a decent year last year. That's why I think he's great for their offense. If they want to put points on the board, Siemian needs to play good.
For me, I like saying this. I think that Pat Fitzgerald has Kirk Ferentz disease. You know, the years that we think that they're going to be horrible, they'll somehow win 8 or 9 games. And the years that we think they're going to be great, they win 2 or 3 games. So, you know, everybody, I think, is pretty down on Northwestern right now, and rightfully so. I mean, they've lost their best player, and, you know, they've had a lot of turmoil. And I don't think the wanting to go unionized helped mold this team with the way they thought they would. It sounded like there was a lot of trouble in the locker room during that situation. So, you know, it's set up to be a 2 or 3 win season at most. But maybe they'll shock the world and come out and win 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, I think they win about 5 games this year. I don't think there's a chance of them going bowl eligible because their schedule is just too tough, I think. Because I think they're going to even lose to Northern Illinois in week 2 because Northern Illinois, they pretty much established they're the MAC team to watch every year now. I mean, they're coming off another great season. So, and, I mean, they might even be hard-pressed to win week 1 against Cal at home because Cal, I'm sure, has got to be a better team this year. I mean, they got Sonny Dykes running the offense out there, and he's got such a wide-open offense. Will the defense be able to slow down the Cal offense to win that game?
The one game that I'm kind of intrigued about on Northwestern's schedule, and just because they've traditionally been a thorn in the past, is at Iowa, because Northwestern has the bye week before they travel to Iowa. I think Iowa will win that game, but that is, in years past, Northwestern has usually been a major thorn. Been a major thorn to Iowa in over the season. So that one will be something to keep an eye out for.
I thought you were going to say Notre Dame.
You hoped.
Jeez, no.
Any final predictions on Northwestern's win total, guys? What do you think? You think they go bowl eligible, yes or no?
I'm saying no.
I say no. A couple of weeks ago I would have said yes, but now no.
I agree with that as well. I don't think they're going to go to a bowl, but as Jeremiah says, they might have Kirk Ferentz disease, so they might pull off a stunner and have a bowl. They may go to a bowl after all, but we'll have to wait and see. And now to the final team in the West, but certainly not least, the Wisconsin Badgers, the favorite in the West Division, of course. They are coming off a 9-4 season where they got a 6-2 conference record, and they had a close loss to South Carolina in the Capital One Bowl. They had the 72nd toughest schedule. They open up with a doozy, though, in a neutral site game first week against LSU in Houston. I'm sure you're going to be there, aren't you, Jeremiah?
Oh, absolutely.
And then they come home against Western Illinois. They get a bye week then they get Bowling Green and South Florida at home, followed by a road trip to Northwestern, and then a home game against Illinois, followed by a bye week. They then come home for homecoming against Maryland. They go on the road at Rutgers, at Purdue, come home for Nebraska. Then they have a road game at Iowa, and they finish off with a home game against Minnesota. So not the toughest schedule after LSU for Wisconsin. They avoid Ohio State and Michigan State this year, so that's a big boost for Badger schedule this season. Jeremiah, who do you think the players are going to be to watch for Wisconsin this season?
Well, let me start with this. Dear Big Ten coaches, can you please stop scheduling neutral game against other teams 4 hours away from theirs and 20 hours away from yours? That's not a neutral game. That's a home game for LSU. So, you know, I don't know why these coaches keep falling for these tricks that the SEC are pulling on this.
Ooh, can I join in on a rant on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dear Big Ten coaches, please stop stealing Urban Meyer's stuff, like the Black Stripes.
Yeah.
And Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
The Anderson one got to be as big of a pain as Burt was.
Yeah. But well, as far as players go, you know, obviously Melvin Gordon's back. He'll probably get 30,000 yards rushing this year. He'll set all kinds of galaxy records, I guess, with that amount of rushing. But they're going to miss Aberderis, obviously. And I don't know who their quarterback's going to be. Their second leading passer last year was Chris Borland, who was at a linebacker. So who knows who.
Yeah, they have Joel Stavi returning at quarterback, so I think he'll have a pretty good season. He had a pretty good game against us last year.
Another guy that had a decent game against Ohio State for Wisconsin last year, a defensive back named Sojourn Shelton.
Yeah, he's
redshirt freshman. I mean, we talked about Gordon, we talked about Stavi, but I think Shelton is going to become a very familiar name, not only you know, to Big Ten fans, but I think around the country. I think he's really kind of showed himself to be a very, very solid defensive back.
Well, and that Michael Caputo?
Yeah.
The safety, he's going to be good too.
Exactly.
And let me add this. You know, Wisconsin, rather, only has four traditional away games at Northwestern, at Rutgers, at Purdue, and at Iowa. Those are all four winnable games on the road. If they somehow can win that game against LSU, which is, I think, very doable. The way LSU or the way Wisconsin plays football, I think they match up well against LSU and have proven that in the past. I believe they beat them in a bowl game a couple years ago, if I'm correct. So, you know, this is a team that could go 12-0 in the regular season, depending on how things fall out. I think that game at Iowa and the home game against Nebraska, two of the last 3 weeks of the season there, that'll determine their season, not the LSU game, or definitely not the Bowling Green game.
It would be so great for the Big Ten in terms of the national perception if Wisconsin could win that game against LSU. You know, you're talking national television audience, and as I mentioned when we were talking earlier, I realize I'm probably the only person that believes this, but I think Wisconsin's the team to beat in the West Division. I think the way that the schedule sets up, even with the toughest games at the end of the season against Nebraska and at Iowa, I think Wisconsin is going to be the team to beat in the West Division.
They're my pick.
That's my pick as well.
Okay. They got the best offensive line, the best running back core. You know, their secondary is pretty good, and their special teams are up there. So, mm-hmm. I mean, those are all, you know, recipes for success.
And I think a very underrated coach.
Yeah, and, you know, he's quieter under the radar, and who do you learn from?
Yeah, yep. Iowa game will be a big game for the West.
Yeah, I think I have them going 12-0. I think they're going to beat LSU. I mean, LSU, I'm sure there's going to be some scandal breaks out for LSU for the season because that's how it always is for them. They have to kick off a couple players off the team for something.
No, they won't. No, they won't. They'll vote on it.
Oh, yeah.
The SEC doesn't kick off players.
They just temporarily tell them to go away from the team for a week, and then they sneak them back in.
Yeah, and then, you know, Clay Travis and all them, then they want to just bash Urban Meyer. Why didn't you do this? And you run a corrupt program and blah, blah, blah. And why is Florida still having arrests? And he's not there for how long?
Blame Urban. That's the anytime there's a problem, you just gotta blame Urban.
Right. Alabama's got a cupcake schedule. Blame Urban.
Yep. He scheduled all those games for Nick Saban.
Exactly.
Yeah, Wisconsin, everyone talks about Ohio State, Michigan State are the only two elite teams, but I don't know why nobody's mentioned Wisconsin. I mean, that kind of baffles me. Nobody's talking about them.
And Wisconsin's always been up there, too, and that's the thing. Even when, you know, our buddy Burt, they've always been a tough team.
Absolutely. They've always been a pain in our side.
So, but, yeah, I think you know, my final prediction for the West, since we're done with the teams, we'll just discuss our final predictions here, if that's okay, Josh.
Yeah, that's fine.
I've got, and I think we should, because it's already 50 minutes long, I think we should do the East next week since we discussed Braxton so long.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's just end with our predictions on how the West will finish. And I'm going to go with, in sixth place, we'll have the Purdue Boilermakers. In fifth place, I have...
You mean seventh place.
Or seventh place, I have the Purdue Boilermakers. In sixth place, I have Northwestern. In fifth place, I have Illinois. In fourth place, I have Minnesota. Third place, I have Wisconsin. Second, Nebraska. And I've got Iowa winning the West.
Wow.
Interesting.
I just want to be different.
I have Purdue, and I have Purdue bring up the rear in the West. Sixth, Illinois. Fifth, Minnesota. Fourth, Northwestern. Third, Nebraska. Second, Iowa, 11-1, and Wisconsin at 12-0, winning the West.
There could be three 10-win teams in the West.
Yeah. See, I agree. I believe Purdue is going to bring up or be a basement dweller again, but Jeremiah and I disagree. I think Illinois is going to be having another rough season, and I think I believe Pat Fitzgerald is a better coach than Tim Beckman, so I have Northwestern. Then Minnesota finishing fourth. I have Iowa finishing third. I believe Nebraska will be better than we anticipate, even with the injuries, and I believe Wisconsin is going to win the West.
Ooh. Okay. I have Purdue coming seventh, Illinois, Northwestern, Minnesota, Wisconsin. No, Minnesota, Nebraska, Wisconsin. I have Iowa winning the West. I think Iowa's really underrated, and they can run the table this year.
Yeah, that favorable schedule that really helps them
out. Yeah. Yep.
What do you think, Shannon?
Well, I originally, when I wrote a piece for Sal Soothsayer, I originally had Purdue at 7, Illinois at 6, Minnesota at 5, Northwestern at 4, Iowa at 3, Nebraska at 2, and Wisconsin at 1. Things have changed. So I'm going Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, and Wisconsin.
I wouldn't say things have changed as much as you came around to a real smart way of thinking, like, in my opinion.
Well, I just...
I'm just joking. I agree. Things have changed, absolutely. But
Listen, Mr. Shorman.
I just think he had the best opinion, actually, in my opinion. I thought he was right up there with me as far as the prediction of who had to pass.
Well, and I'm wrong. I'm totally wrong. I have to refix it.
So we're all in agreement. It's going to be either Iowa or Wisconsin.
I think so.
Yeah, pretty much.
Honestly,
it's kind of a wild card.
I mean, Nebraska could win it just as easily. I think those three teams are the best teams.
Not yet.
I think anybody else is close to them.
Those are the three best in the West.
Yeah.
And I think all three of them could win 10 games, and which would be incredible for the Big Ten if they did.
It's just the West is nowhere near it has the talent or the teams as the East.
Yeah. One thing I forgot to point out about the conference, the divisions this year being new, thank God we don't have Leaders and Legends anymore.
Come on, I miss that.
I didn't like that.
Oh.
I didn't like it.
I liked it too.
I still can't figure out which one was which, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Brutal.
I just remembered it as the Ohio State division with Wisconsin and then the bottom feeders and then everybody else in the other division.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's the West division. We're going to take a look at the East division in our next podcast next week. We all agree Wisconsin or Iowa is going to be probably win the West division with Nebraska being right there as well. But we'll take a look at the East next week as we wrap up this very first episode of Men of Scarlet and Gray. Before we sign off here and get our final thoughts in, we want to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at MOTSAG. You can also follow us on Google Plus as well as our personal accounts on Google Plus. We're all on there. And like us on Facebook as well. You can also email us, askmotsag@gmail.com. Ask us any questions about the show or any questions you'd like to answer on next week's show or anything about the site. Just whatever you need, just contact us, one of our social media accounts or that email address. So as we sign off here on the first episode, any final thoughts, guys, on the first podcast here, the West Division, Braxton Miller, whatever you got on your mind?
I hope Braxton gets healthy and... I think we're in great shape with our defense, and I think we're better off than what people think we are. I'm not going to go jump off the I-40 bridge, and for people who don't know where that's at, it's in Northeast Ohio. It's a very tall bridge.
I agree.
I just hope that next Saturday gets here as soon as possible, because playing this game and seeing how JT and Cardell play is going to help us all determine on how we think the season's going to go. And right now we're just all playing a guessing game, so... Hopefully, you know, these next 10 days we'll be here and be over as soon as possible.
Yes. I will be at the Navy game if anybody wants to, a tailgate, so give me a heads up.
You heard it there, guys.
Awesome. You're going to do a live report, right?
Oh, of course. For my laptop, you know, I got the Wi-Fi hotspot box ready, you know.
That's awesome.
I'm just kidding.
That'll be a fun game.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's like an hour from my school, so it should be fun.
We did need to do a full report on it for the site, because that would be great to hear about the entire experience.
No, I definitely will. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's great.
And then everybody else will be listening to Uncle Vern and Gary Danielson call the game.
I feel bad for you guys.
Awful.
Yeah, we got the SEC Network announcers. So that was our final thoughts. The SEC?
I don't know that. Nope. Never heard of it.
No.
God's Conference?
Nope.
The SEC.
Nope. Never heard of it.
The team down south, the South Conference, Buckeyes will be playing next week. We'll have the East Division preview next week, as well as our preview for the very first game against Navy. We're hoping to have a Navy blogger on with us as well, to talk with us and pal around with us, make some predictions, and We enjoyed this first episode. I think it was pretty fun, guys. I look forward to second week next week. Go Buckeyes.
Go Bucks.
Thanks, guys. Go Bucks.